Program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight, with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and Hi. The Progressive Voices Network.
We are here, better late than never.
Yes, the pre-show music ran a little long today, but that's all right, because I could listen to Joe Jackson anytime. It was a set of politician and political music, wrapping up with Right and Wrong by the always awesome Joe Jackson, who, by the way, is going on tour again. His 2017 summer tour kicks off right here in Fort Lauderdale on May 31st, and I got my tickets. He's going to be at the Parker Playhouse. I can't wait. Joe Jackson is one of my all-time favorite artists, so if you have a chance to see him, you should go, because he really is awesome. JoeJackson.com is all the information. Welcome to a Thursday. I am Nicole Sandler. That's the name of the show, The Nicole Sandler Show, at NicoleSandler.com, and of course on the Progressive Voices Network, and it is a big day. The reason for the politician theme and the pre-show music is because today is Politics Day. There's a lot of it going on. First of all, Dump is flexing his political muscle. He had the House Republicans over to the White House today to try to twist their arms a little further to get them to vote on the truly heinous America, what is it, the America Health Care Act? The AHCA, as opposed to the ACA, which was the Affordable Care Act, which of course wasn't truly affordable, but this is un-American. So, you know, they all got it wrong. But the contention here, the Freedom Caucus, those are the former teabaggers, former Tea Partiers, who, you know, for them, this new Obamacare repeal and replace bill just wasn't ugly enough. It didn't hurt enough people. It didn't take away enough benefits from people who already have them. It just wasn't going to be painful enough for the American people, so they are full tilt against it. So what did Trump and Paul Ryan try to do today? Well, they tried to make it a little sweeter for them. And by making it sweeter, that means taking away more things that, you know, oh, Americans need to live. So one thing that they're talking about doing in this, you know, 11th hour negotiation is doing away with the essential health benefits that were crucial to making Obamacare work. And you might remember, you know, a lot of people who complained that they lost their insurance policies after the Affordable Care Act went into effect, they were not covered by the crap junk policies they had before. That was because the insurance companies had no regulations saying you can't write junk policies. You can't write a policy that's not going to cover someone for hospitalization. You see, people were lulled into this false security, thinking, well, I've got health insurance, except their health insurance didn't cover anything. So essential health benefits were written into the Affordable Care Act to make sure that you're covered. And here's what the essential health benefits are. All right. Ambulatory patient services, that's outpatient care. So if you go in for a procedure that's done on an outpatient benefit, you're not admitted to the hospital, it's covered. Emergency room services, you go to the emergency room, you're covered. Hospitalization, something happens and you're admitted, it's covered. Maternity and newborn care, because people get pregnant. Yes, women and younger women, but if you want to make sure that all pregnant women get covered, you cover everybody. Because leaving it up to the resources of the individual insurance companies, they wouldn't be. Mental health covered, as it should be. That's one of the first things that this Trump Care tried to do away with. Well, you know, everybody doesn't need mental health services. You want to bet? At some point in your life, you should take advantage of those mental health services, because a little bit of therapy can go a long way. Prescription drugs, because what good is a prescription if you can't pay for it? Laboratory services. You know, you ever go in for blood and they give you the estimate of what it'll cost if your insurance doesn't pay? Three blood tests the other day, $409. Seriously. You know what the insurance company pays the lab for those three tests? $29. But what they bill you if you don't have insurance? $409. That's why I call our health insurance system here government-sanctioned extortion, because that's what it is. You either pay them or you'll pay up big time later, right? So yes, your lab services must be covered. Rehabilitative and habilitative services and devices. Yeah, because if you, you know, you break your back and you need to go to rehab, that's covered. Preventive and wellness services and chronic disease management, all covered as part of the essential health benefits. And pediatric services, including oral and vision care. Now, they didn't think enough of us older people to put, you know, dental and vision inside of a healthcare policy, which should be covered. But I understand even some of the other nations that have universal healthcare still don't have dental and don't have vision, which is really insane. But all of those that I just enumerated for you were known as the essential health benefits that are covered under every policy. So a lot of people were bitching, well, they canceled my insurance policy. Well, guess what? Before the Affordable Care Act came into being, my policies were always getting canceled. That was nothing new to the Affordable Care Act coming into law. It happened before, it's happened after. But people were bitching, well, I had a catastrophic policy that didn't cover jack shit. Or, you know, I remember the story of one woman, and actually I'm not remembering it perfectly, so forgive me if I'm fumfering a little bit for the details. But she was bitching because her insurance policy was canceled. And when the reporter who was doing the article on her dug into her policy, they realized it covered nothing. It didn't cover hospitalization. It didn't cover most procedures. On one procedure, it did cover, it would only cover up to $50. And the procedure cost like $4,000 or something like that. I mean, they were ridiculous. These protections were put in place to help us, the consumer, the patient, to make sure that if we're paying all this money for a health insurance policy, when we actually go to use it, we'll be covered. And as one who used my Obamacare policy bigly last year, let me tell you something. Everything was covered, from my robotic lung cancer surgery to the hospitalization and everything in between, my medications, all the tests, the every 3 month CAT scans. And I'm telling you, if this piece of crap bill goes through, I'm fucked, and not in a good way. What'll happen is, because I'm 57 years old now, I'll be eligible for the top tier of tax credits, which means they'll give me a $4,000 refundable tax credit, which for me won't do jack shit. Because at 58 or 59, as I'll be when this would go into effect, I won't be able to buy anything for anywhere near that. And even with a $4,000 subsidy, that'll be a drop in the bucket, if that's the saying, for the many, many, many thousands of dollars an inclusive policy would cost me, a policy that'll cover all of what ails me or what may ail me in 2 or 3 or 4 years. So tonight's the night this vote is supposed to happen. And I don't know. And depending on who you listen to, this American Healthcare Act is either dead in the water or the Freedom Caucus has come around. You know, Crooks and Liars, which is not always the most accurate website out there, they're saying Freedom Caucus caves to Trump on AHCA. Well, that's not what I heard. I heard that they came out of this meeting with Trump, that he got two standing ovations. Well, because, you know, he's a reality TV show star. He's right there, right at their speed. But they applauded and stood for him twice. And then they came out of the meeting and said, hell no, I'm not voting for that piece of shit. Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut, he tweeted out, so clear now, the AHCA is intentionally designed to hurt as many people as possible. The crueler the bill gets, the more votes it gets. So who knows? Maybe more of these Freedom Caucus Republicans in the House will come around and vote for it, but that'll mean fewer in the Senate. Well, not fewer. I mean, it's Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee, you know, that cabal. in the Senate who also wanted to be, I guess, as reprehensible as possible, to hurt as many people as possible in order for them to throw their support behind it. But you do have those few moderate Republicans in the Senate. I'm sort of drawing a blank right now. Can't tell you who, but I guess there are some Senate Republicans in blue or purple states that are afraid if they kill off Medicaid, too many people in their states would be hurt and they might lose their jobs. Well, isn't that a shame? You know, I heard one of the guys from the Freedom Caucus say regarding, Trump's threats to, that they'll be out of a job soon. You know, Trump, that's what he's best at, is threatening people. He is such a vindictive piece of shit, isn't he? Anyway, this one guy said, well, I always knew this was a temporary job. And that's what it should be. These people who serve us in Congress need to do their jobs and not worry about, whether they're going to be voted out of office next time. They need to do, what we vote them into office to do. Anyway, so going on over in the House, who knows? Allegedly, originally, this vote was going to come down around 3 Eastern. Now they're shooting for 7. I go for 11 tonight if it's not pulled. I think it'll be pulled. But then again, I don't know anything. I really have no clue what's going to happen with this. Then over in the Senate, why are you home? Shouldn't you be in school? Yes. Sorry. Hold on. Allison's here and she's supposed to be in school right now.
My teacher had an appointment, so they said, if leave if you can right now, at 3.
So. Okay. All right. So you left at 3. All right. Well, you can go do some work now from inside.
Okay,
go away. the lovely Allison Sandler, everybody. Anyway, so in the Senate, today is day 4 in the Neil Gorsuch confirmation hearings. The latest out of the Senate is that Chuck Schumer first said he's a no vote. And then shortly after Schumer came out and said, I'm not voting for this guy, the Democrats announced that they will filibuster. Now, of course, Mitch McConnell's going, how dare they filibuster? Because we've never done anything like that. We're always so agreeable when we were in the minority. We worked really hard with the Democrats. No, actually, he never said that and never did it either. But of course, that's what they do on that side of the aisle. They pretend like they weren't obstructionists for 8 years. So, go figure. That's what's going on over there. Anyway, so there's a whole lot going on. And then there's the whole saga of Devin Nunes. Devin Nunes. What kind of a name is Devin Nunes? Yeah, I know. It's not his fault. That's just what his parents. No wonder he's so the way he is, because his parents named him Devin. So anyway, I'm not going to be here tomorrow. I put a little note in the chat room, said I'm not going to be here tomorrow. And the reason is that I've got a friend in town who's actually going to be here later tonight, who I haven't seen in years, and she's visiting. And she's only here for tonight and tomorrow night. She leaves early Saturday, and we're going to go to the beach, so I'm going to play hooky. But so what I'll do tomorrow is what I've been threatening to do for a couple of months now, and that is, back in 2008, it was October, I don't know the date offhand, but it was October 2008. It was less than a month before the 2008 presidential election. If you can remember back that far, it was Barack Obama versus John McCain. John McCain, who actually came out yesterday and said,
it's a bizarre situation. What I think the reason why I'm calling for this select committee or a special committee is I think that this back and forth and what the American people have found out so far, that no longer does the Congress have credibility to handle this alone.
So,
and I don't say that lightly.
What this alone is the House Intelligence Committee investigation into the Trump campaign's collusion with the Russians, right? So the House Intelligence Committee was allegedly investigating this along with Trump's contention that Obama wiretapped him at Trump Tower, right? And it seemed like Devin Nunes and the ranking Democrat, Adam Schiff, were working well together until all of a sudden Devin Nunes got something yesterday and ran like a little baby to the media. Look what I got. And then said, now I'm going to take it over to show President Dump. And he did, without briefing his committee or the ranking Democrat on the committee. Again, this all unfolded moments before I went on the air yesterday, and I spoke with Richard Esko about it, with RJ Esko about it very briefly, because neither one of us really knew what had happened because he was doing another interview and I was in show prep mode. So we've got all that in today's What's News. We'll get that for you in just a moment. It just sort of brings you up to date on what that's all about, and then we'll get Howie Klein on the line. But tomorrow, so I won't be here. I'm going to be playing hooky. But, you know, with all the talk about Breitbart, what most people who are today plugged into what's going on in politics know about Breitbart is that it's this the media home for white supremacists. It's Steve Bannon's former place of employment. It's where the, quote, alt-right, and I don't use that term because I don't want to whitewash what they are. They're white supremacists, white nationalists. They are the worst of the worst, and they have a home at Breitbart. Well, Breitbart is not just a weird name for a bullshit news site. It was a guy's name. There was a man named Andrew Breitbart who was a dick. Pure and simple, he was an asshole. And he was a Matt Drudge wannabe. He was an acolyte of Drudge's. He wanted to be Drudge. So he started his own little wannabe news division, news website. And he called it Breitbart because, you know, he wanted to be Drudge. So he just used his own name. And, you know, he'd show up. He would show up at Netroots Nation and try to pick fights with people. He was just a jerk. And I had a few run-ins with him over the years. And on this day, it was the morning after the final Obama-McCain debate, just a few weeks before the 2008 presidential election. And my friend Mark Germain, who hosts a show at talkradio1.com, had the two of us on to debate the debate. So tomorrow, and it goes just about an hour. So tomorrow I'll repackage it for you. I'll put it in a little package tied up in a bow. And tomorrow you will hear a rebroadcast 8.5 years later of Nicole Sandler and Andrew Breitbart debating the Obama-McCain debate. You'll see how much things have changed and how little things have changed. All right. So that's going to happen tomorrow. I mean, tomorrow when I'm not here. And then Monday, I'll be back with another edition of the music show. Monday morning, I'm supposed to interview Roger Stone. Go figure. He blocked me on Twitter. I never conversed with him on Twitter. I don't know why he blocked me. But if he doesn't cancel on me before Monday, I will interview him Monday morning. Depending on how long I get with him, which knowing me, I'll say something and he'll hang up on me. But supposedly we have 30 minutes. If we actually get 30 minutes, I'll run that next Wednesday because, you know, Laffy will be here on Tuesday. So we'll see. It's all fluid, as they say. But anyway, that's what's going on. We'll take a quick break. We'll do today's What's News, bring you up to date on what happened yesterday with Nunes. And then we'll be back with Howie Klein. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about today. So it is a busy Thursday on the Nicole Sandler Show. We'll check in with What's News and be back with Howie Klein next. It's NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network. I read the news
today, oh boy. It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
I served as chief counsel of the House Intelligence Committee, and I think in the 40 years of the committee's existence, since the post-Watergate era reforms with the Church and Pike committees that emerged from those scandals, I have never heard of a chairman of an oversight committee going to brief the President of the United States about concerns he has about things he's read in intelligence reports.
Yet, that's exactly what Devin Nunes Nunes, chair of the House Intelligence Committee, did on Wednesday. Jeremy Bash, former CIA chief counsel, explained.
The job of the committee is to do oversight over the executive branch, not to bring them into their investigation or tip them off to things that they may be looking at. And I've got to believe that other members of the committee are horrified at what they just witnessed. This is a chairman who is supposed to be doing an impartial, bipartisan investigation of the president and his inner circle, and instead he goes and basically tells the president and his team everything he knows. It's very concerning, particularly when what he is saying is that the collection was lawful, it was court-ordered by lifetime federal judges against valid foreign intelligence targets, that the reports generated by the nonpartisan, non-political intelligence community were of foreign intelligence value, and then he goes and tries to make this into a political cover story for the president's tweet storm two Saturdays ago, and potentially reveals to the president things about the committee's existing investigation. This is a true breakdown in the entire oversight process.
So Nunes went rogue. Before discussing it with the ranking Democrat on the committee, he took the info to Speaker Paul Ryan and the president, and he held two press conferences.
I recently confirmed that on numerous occasions, the intelligence community incidentally collected information about U.S. citizens involved in the Trump transition. Details about U.S. persons associated with the incoming administration, details with little or no apparent foreign intelligence value, were widely disseminated in intelligence community reporting. I have confirmed that additional names of Trump transition team members were unmasked. None of this surveillance was related to Russia or the investigation of Russian activities or of the Trump team.
Ranking member Adam Schiff is not happy.
The committee has still not received the intercepts or other information that the chairman was referring to, and therefore it is really impossible for us to evaluate any of the merits of what the chairman has said. But I can say this. The chairman will need to decide whether he is the chairman of an independent investigation into conduct, which includes allegations of potential coordination between the Trump campaign and the Russians, or he is going to act as a surrogate of the White House, because he cannot do both. And unfortunately, I think the actions of today throw great doubt into the ability of both the chairman and the committee to conduct the investigation the way it ought to be conducted. I have expressed these grave concerns with the chairman. I only learned about this the way that all of you did when the chairman briefed the press in advance of briefing his own committee members. And that is a deep, deep problem. I think it does underscore the importance of establishing an independent commission, a body that is fully independent of any political considerations, including those that may emanate from the White House. That would certainly give me a lot of confidence that in addition to whatever work our committee does and this Intelligence Committee does, that there is a truly independent body that is looking into the grave issues that have been raised.
Even though Thursday is the day for the House to vote on the Obamacare repeal and replace, this is the story that dominated the news for the rest of Wednesday, prompting statements like this from CNN's Don Lemon.
As someone who was on the transition team, as someone who is trying to lead a nonpartisan investigation, it made him look like a shill for the White House.
And Senator John McCain weighed in.
It's a bizarre situation. What I think, the reason why I'm calling for this select committee or a special committee, is I think that this back and forth and what the American people have found out so far, that no longer does the Congress have credibility to handle this alone. And I don't say that lightly.
The House Intelligence Committee is investigating the Trump campaign's possible collusion with the Russians. To that end, Chuck Todd asked Adam Schiff if there was any evidence at this point.
So you have seen direct evidence of collusion?
I don't want to go into specifics, but I will say that there is evidence that is not circumstantial and is very much worthy of investigation. So that is what we ought to do. Now, again, I think we have been dealt a serious body blow to the credibility of our ability to get answers by today's events. And to me, it underscores the importance of having an independent commission look at this as a supplement to anything the Congress does.
And if all that wasn't enough, CNN late Wednesday had actual breaking news.
FBI has information that indicates associates of President Donald Trump communicated with suspected Russian operatives to possibly coordinate the release of information damaging to Hillary Clinton's campaign, U.S. officials told us. FBI Director James Comey made his bombshell announcement, as you'll recall, Monday before Congress, that the FBI is investigating the Trump campaign's ties to Russia. So the FBI is now reviewing this information, which includes human intelligence, travel, business, and phone records, as well as accounts of in-person meetings, according to the official officials we've spoken with, and the information is raising the suspicions of FBI counterintelligence investigators that the coordination may have taken place, though officials we've spoken with cautioned that this information was not conclusive and that this investigation is ongoing. The FBI would not comment, nor would the White House, though Trump officials have denied there is any evidence of collusion.
And that's today's dose of Nicole Sandler's What's News. Hear Nicole's show Tuesday through Friday from 3 to 4 Eastern at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network. The Nicole Sandler Show is 100% listener-supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. You'll get all the regular shows and have access to the new Monday Music Show podcast and The Vault at NicoleSandler.com, plus bonus content. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you. Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Hey, Howie.
Hey, Nicole.
Hey, so there's breaking news. News is broken. House GOP leaders delay vote on health care repeal bill in setback for President Dump and Speaker Ryan.
So I wrote that in my early morning post. You would not believe the kind of pushback, the vitriol that I took from our side of people saying, how dare you? What are you saying? What are you talking about? All these like people on our side generally were screaming at me because it was obvious it was going to happen. And I wrote that it was going to happen. And there was a general flip out. I got so many horrible emails. I couldn't believe it.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. What? Why?
Question that we're gonna postpone the vote. They don't have the votes.
Of course.
I mean, Steve Scalise, who's in charge of their vote count, is generally thought of as the worst whip from either party in contemporary history. No one remembers anyone who's stupider and is less able to count votes. This guy cannot count votes. And he put together a whip team that's as dumb as he is. He picked people like himself. And they can't get it right. So you know, I'm watching really, really closely. I'm talking to the Republicans who I know, staffers generally, and they're telling me, you know, they're losing this guy, they're losing this guy. Their whip count says they've got this guy and this guy and this guy. The three of them are solid no's. And then you see, you know, Trump and Ryan are running ads against these people in their districts and robocalls. They launched robocalls, a million of them. And they think they're going to turn these people around by doing this to them? These people are furious at them. They hate them. They want them to fail now.
Wow. And then today, so Trump goes over to, or Trump has all the Freedom Caucus, the teabaggers, over to the White House. Apparently, there were two standing ovations. But when they came out, he, once again, as he's learned, as he tries to strong arm these people, when he does that, he loses more votes.
He does. He's losing. He's not gaining. He's not gaining their votes. He's gaining a few. But for every vote of theirs that he gains, he loses another couple of votes from the more mainstream Republicans.
Well, because
Dent came out against it. Dan Donovan in Staten Island just came out against it this morning. Ileana Roth-Lehtinen, who's a Paul Ryan ally, and never goes against him. She reiterated today she's not voting for this thing. And, you know, he could sing and he could dance and she's not going to vote for it. And that, and I mean, this guy Amadei, he's the last Republican left in Nevada. All of the Republicans in Nevada, all the House Republicans were defeated. So there's one guy left, the guy who represents the Reno area, Amadei. And there's a poll came out showing that if he voted for Trump Care, he would lose his seat. It's that simple, and it's not close. It's a very solid loss that he would have to face. Now, maybe he could turn it around between now and then, but nobody wants to ride into that storm for no reason at all. Why would he do it? So he say he announced he's not going to do it. Now, I'm sure you know this already, but last night or late yesterday afternoon, the Koch brothers announced that they're putting together a multi-million dollar fund to defend any Republicans who vote no from Trump's primary threats or Ryan, whoever, you know, is going to do these primaries. So for example, everybody's favorite villain on another matter is Devin Nunes these days.
Yeah,
everybody
so
hates
talk
Devin
about
Nunes,
him, yeah.
Basically, and we'll talk about that later, I'm sure, or maybe you've already talked about it because of what he's doing in the House Intelligence Committee. But in 2014, Devin Nunes was one of the leaders of a primary effort against Justin Amash. Now, Justin Amash, you probably don't agree, and nor do I, with most of what he says. He's pretty out there to the right.
But he's good on some things.
He's a principled guy. Right. He bases what he does on principles. He explains it really, really carefully on his Facebook page. The guy is a worthwhile, for a Republican, he's very worthwhile. And Ryan Boehner and Nunes led a very, very, very highly funded campaign. I'm talking about millions of dollars against Justin. They ran a multimillionaire against him and tried to defeat him. And they failed. They couldn't do it. And one of the things that Nunes did, which was considered really dirty for the head of the Intelligence Committee to do, here we're talking about a Republican head of the Intelligence Committee, announces to the press loud and clear, Justin Amash is al-Qaeda's best friend in Congress.
Really?
I mean, what kind of a horrible thing is that to say about one of your colleagues?
Right.
And these are the people they think they're going to change their minds? They think they're going to say, oh, booby, please vote for our bill. No,
unreal.
It ain't going to happen.
Unreal. No, and what they did today, I mean, they tried to craft it to make it more, hurtful to the average American. Cut out all that whole list of essential things that any health insurance policy has to cover under the Affordable Care Act. They're saying, well, all right, we'll pull that out. So you don't have to cover hospitalization. You don't have to cover chronic illnesses.
Maternity care.
You don't have to cover maternity care. You don't have to cover labs. You don't have. So we'll go back to those junk policies that we had before the Affordable Care Act actually protected consumers so that at least you knew if you were paying exorbitant rates to the for the for-profit, you know, insurance extortionists, that at least you were going to get something for your money, as opposed to these policies that they were selling before that didn't cover anything. So that's what they're going to allow back in again. And it's still not good enough for the haters. And then it lets them lose some of the more moderate members.
Which is what's been happening. So from what I can tell, they can only lose 22 votes, and they're over 32 now.
Wow. So Dump's his going in and working and negotiating is backfiring on him.
Great negotiator. Every time he makes a call, they lose another vote.
Yes. Right. Amazing. Now, I want to, before we move on to surveillance and Nunes and Adam Schiff, if this were to go through, in California, you guys have a unique situation there because you have it written into law in California that healthcare has to cover abortion, right?
Yes. So, in other words, if you buy your insurance policy on the markets in the insurance markets,
right,
those insurance policies have to cover abortion services. That's the law.
Okay.
The way Ryan and his cronies wrote Trump Care, it's exactly the opposite. Any policy that covers abortion services is excluded.
Wow.
So that means the California markets, the California insurance markets would completely collapse if this thing ever gets put into law. So what I'm saying here is that there are literally, there should be no California Republican congressman that should consider voting for this thing. If they do, they're taking away the insurance from all of their constituents who are covered now, not 70,000 in each district, but more like 150,000 in each district. So it would just be a disaster for them. So I think that they're going to lose a lot of the sort of mainstream conservatives. They're not, you know, people call them moderates. They're not moderates. They're definitely conservatives, but they're the more mainstream conservatives. You know, people like Mimi Walters, for example, in Orange County. You know, she never, you know, goes away from what Ryan wants. She's a complete Ryan fanatic. Mm-hmm. Whatever he says, that's what she does. She can't vote for this thing now. If she votes for this, she'll lose her seat. It's that simple.
Wow. Well, so all right. So now it looks like it's dead in the water anyway. There's no way. They're not going to, one day is not going to make a difference. If they're getting, if the no list is growing, they're moving in the wrong direction. Just like Trump's poll numbers.
Exactly.
So Howie Klein. All right. I was saying I wanted to talk about Nunes. Actually, more than him, I want to talk about Adam Schiff, because he's been in Congress for a long time. I don't remember us ever talking about him in glowing terms. I know that, but I do know that as the ranking member on the Intelligence Committee, he's been giving him a bit of hell. I've actually been impressed with him. Now, I know he's your congressman, isn't he?
He is. He represents my district, which is a relatively new thing. He was originally, so I know Adam since 1999. He was a friend at one time. He was a state senator. He was kind of a, what they call in California, he was like one of the mods. And when they're referring to Democrats as mods, they're talking about conservative Democrats. So he was a conservative Democrat in the state legislature. He represented Burbank and I think Glendale, or if not all of Glendale, then part of Glendale. That was his district. So we had this really awful Republican representing that area and up into Pasadena in a district that was sort of changing and becoming less and less Republican, but there was still a Republican congressman named Jim Rogan. So you may remember, or maybe not, Rogan's name. He was very, very influential and important in one matter only in his entire miserable career, and that was the impeachment of Bill Clinton. He was one of the leaders of the Bill Clinton impeachment. So most of the people who were involved with the Bill Clinton impeachment were Southerners who were in, like, you know, blood red districts, and you couldn't get to them. There was no way to defeat these people. Rogan was the one. He was the one Republican from a kind of a swingy district. It was still red, but it was turning. Every year it got less and less Republican, and he was the one Republican who could be defeated. So that race in 2000. Where Adam Schiff challenged Rogan was, till that time, the single most expensive congressional race in the history of America. No race had more money spent, both more money from Democrats and more money from Republicans. It was like the biggest dogfight imaginable. That's when I met Adam. Because this was, you know, it was 1999, so it was pre-internet. People weren't really raising money on the internet the way they do now. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was the president of Reprise Records.
Right.
Adam's district was partially in the music business, where all the music business offices were, not all of them, but many of them. And I said, hey, we got to get this Rogan out, and we got to get Adam in. And I helped the old-fashioned way by getting people to write checks, not getting people to send in, you know, $20 or $30 in a grassroots way, but going to my peers who were presidents of other companies and vice presidents of other companies and begging them to write a check for Adam. And I raised him well over $100,000, like well over $100,000. So I became a bundler for this guy. And I didn't really know a lot about Adam. You know, I knew he was not exactly like a progressive, but yet he was campaigning as a progressive, you know, as people do in before they get in. So he was kind of sounding pretty good to me. I was a little bit nervous. And then he took me to the home of Chaim Saban. You know who that is, right?
No. Well, I know the name.
I'll say it. just for some of your listeners who might not know. So the Republicans have Sheldon Adelson,
right,
who's an Israeli. He's part of, you know, he's got dual citizenship, but basically he's an Israeli. And he's in charge of keeping the Republicans loyal to whatever the Likud, the right wing part of the Israel of the Israeli politics.
Right.
He's supposed to keep them in line. The Democrats have someone just like that, and it's Chaim Saban. So he's one of the biggest donors, just like Sheldon Adelson is for the Republicans. Chaim Saban is for the Democrats, and he gives, you know, millions of dollars to people like Clinton and other more sort of corporate Democrats. And he lives here in L.A. He's very, very rich. And Adam said to me, "Hey, what are you doing today?" And I said, "Oh, nothing much. I'm just relaxing." He said, "Well, I'm taking my mother and father over to Chaim Saban's house. Why don't you come with us?" And I didn't even know who Chaim Saban was at the time. And I said, "Oh, okay, I'll go meet Adam's parents." So we get it. We pile into Adam's car and drive up to, you know, this incredible mansion estate. If I remember correctly, up in the hills of Beverly Hills, or Brentwood, or one of those places. And I'm sitting around and listening to the talk, and I start to think to myself, "Howie, you're in the wrong place with the wrong people." And I was thinking, "Oh yeah, God, I made a mistake." And that sort of woke me up a little bit to Adam. He got elected. He beat Rogan. I was happy he beat him, but he immediately joined the Blue Dogs. And his votes were not what I was kind of hoping for when I helped to raise money and donated money myself. And that was one of the reasons why I started being very, very careful that, you know, back in 2000 when that happened, I started being very, very, very much more careful about not just supporting Democrats, but looking into who they really are and what kind of a record will indicate what kind of voting they'll do. And Adam wouldn't have passed the test if I would have been more careful at that time. I've been more careful since then. But he was never one of the worst of the Blue Dogs. And I sort of kept up like a, you know, we had a big kind of fight, and he said, "Come on, let's go have a cup of coffee and talk about this." And I basically said some, you know, childish, nasty F words to him and stuff like that. And it was kind of a bad ending of our friendship. Then when I got cancer, he heard about it and he sent me a really, really nice note. This is many years later after me, like, you know, saying horrible things about him for several years.
Right, and you becoming much more involved in progressive politics as well, so much more visible in this world. Right.
And he you know, a friend of mine works for him, and she had said, "Hey, Adam is willing to leave the Blue Dogs, and he wants you to stop attacking him on your blog." I said, "Well, I would like him to leave the Blue Dogs, but I'm not going to stop attacking him unless if he does bad things, I'll attack him."
Right.
So, yeah. So he did leave the Blue Dogs anyway, and he joined the New Dems, who aren't quite as bad, but they're not great.
Right.
They're still bad.
Right.
Not as bad as the Blue Dogs, but they're pretty bad.
Right.
However, he tends to not vote with them. He's for some reason, he's in the New Dems, but he's really more just like a normal, regular Democrat. He votes basically however Nancy Pelosi votes.
Right.
So he's not like some kind of, you know, real progressive, that's for sure. But he's not really as bad as the Blue Dogs or the New Dems. I would say he votes with them maybe 15% of the time. So he's been okay. Then this year, Adam has just been doing a bang-up, phenomenal job in taking the resistance seriously and taking it very seriously and going after Trump in a very lawyerly and thorough fashion. And I've been really I've been meaning to write him and tell him this, that I'm really proud that he's my congressman now.
Yeah, I've been really impressed. Now, was he the ranking member on the Intel Committee before this year, or is this a new position for him?
I think they gave it to him last year. It's a relatively new position for him. It was either last year or the year before, but it's a relatively new position for him. And he's taken to it really well. Now, I should mention, a lot of people on the far left don't like him for his positions on the Intel Committee. They think he is a right-wing warmonger. But I don't. I mean, I think he's doing a really, really good job. but he does get quite a bit of criticism from the left.
Yeah, well, and again, because of past positions, and I knew we had talked about him before, and he was a blue dog. But I've got to tell you, I watch him get up and take on Nunes and take on Trump and take on all these, you know, everything that's going on now with the Intel Committee. And I've been applauding, like this was from yesterday.
The committee has still not received the intercepts or other information that the chairman was referring to, and therefore it is really impossible for us to evaluate any of the merits of what the chairman has said. But I can say this. The chairman will need to decide whether he is the chairman of an independent investigation into conduct, which includes allegations of potential coordination between the Trump campaign and the Russians, or he is going to act as a surrogate of the White House, because he cannot do both. And unfortunately, I think the actions of today throw great doubt into the ability of both the chairman and the committee to conduct the investigation the way it ought to be conducted.
So, and maybe, you know, he is doing a good job in that position and as the attack dog on Nunes, but Nunes is also making it easy by being such an idiot. Dude, him running to, oh, I got something. Let me run to Donald and tell him yesterday. What the hell was that about?
You know, I'm glad you asked me that, because I can tell you exactly what it's about.
Okay.
This is a situation created strictly by the DCCC. Devin Nunes is in a district that's only 41% white. It's the biggest number of people in his district in the Central Valley of California are Hispanic. But because the DCCC has never, and when I say never, I want to emphasize, I don't mean once or twice. I mean never, ever, not once has the Democratic Party ever challenged him. Like last year, he had some guy who ran against him, some local Democrat. And the guy, in order to trigger an FEC report, you have to raise $5,000. And there's no FEC report, which says to me the guy couldn't raise $5,000. So not only did the Democrats, the DCCC, the Democratic Campaign Committee, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, not only did they not help him, he couldn't even raise any money at all, because, you know, basically because they refused to validate that he's a legitimate Democratic candidate. Ironically, he wound up getting 66,000 votes. The guy who the Democrats did back in the district next door, right next door, Nunes is California 22. In California 21, the Democrats spent over $1 million, but they spend it badly. They don't know how to spend the money. They spend it on TV ads. That guy who the Democrats spent the money on wound up only getting 40-some-odd thousand votes. Even though they spent all that money, they do it so badly. I mean, we're doomed with these goddamn DCCC people. Unless that organization gets their shit together, it's just going to be a catastrophe forever. They've never challenged Nunes. They're not even looking to recruit anybody now.
Amazing.
I was on the phone with a bunch of local activists who say they have no contact with the DCCC. They're interviewing candidates. They're trying to find somebody, and they're reaching out to get some guidance on how to do this. And I was on the phone with them for hours talking with them about what to be looking for. And, you know, to don't get a corporate Democrat, because you won't get voters. The voters aren't going to want to vote for him. And instead, to get somebody who is in it for the long run, someone who isn't thinking in terms of, yes, you know, Trump is going to cause a tsunami of hatred towards Republicans and I'll win. Can't do that. A district like this, you need somebody who's in it for a minimum of two cycles, who's going to fight for two cycles, 4 years, to commit themselves for 4 years of real fight, of going and knocking on every door in the district and meeting people and then going and meeting them again and getting yourself out there. I mean, Devin Nunes, because the DCCC has never taken him on, he doesn't have to raise one penny.
Amazing.
He's got a war chest now of $3.1 million now.
Wow.
In 2017 for a race almost 2 years away. And that's before he's done any fundraising. Devin Nunes gets almost all of his money from PACs. Last year, 1%, about $25,000, 1% of his money came from regular, normal donors. The rest of it was all special interest money, all money with strings attached. That's who he is. And he hasn't even started raising, And if he wants to raise another $3 million, he can raise another $3 million. So what we're looking for in a Democrat candidate is someone who's going to commit to hard work and long-term effort, not some rich guy, you know, rich corporate guy, which is, all, of course, all the DCCC ever looks for. All they look for are rich corporate guys. They think, we'll get some rich corporate guy. He's got a good Rolodex. He can call his friends. He'll have lots of money. They'll put lots of ads on TV. And if we're lucky, we'll win. And meanwhile, we can commission the ads and our relatives and friends will get rich.
Right.
That's what the DCCC is, basically.
And they've been that way, and which you know, just means that, yes, we need new blood there, as we've been talking for a long time. I'm a bit heartened, actually, Howie, to hear that some of these groups are reaching out to you. And I know there are a lot of them. There's Brand New Congress. There's Our Revolution. There's, a bunch that
they're
are
indivisible
all
groups that are doing a good job. They're pretty savvy.
But I'm talking about those who are concentrating on electing progressives to Congress. Because I look at 2018, not only for congressional races, but for, you know, statewide elections, for state assemblies and legislatures and governors' offices. I think it's so important because 2020 is our next census year in which they do districting. So gerrymandering is going to come up again. And if the Democrats don't get a better foothold in state houses, we're going to be screwed for another decade. So do you know if anybody's working on that front, on getting governor's offices back?
Sure. There lots and lots of people are. You know, in 2017, there are only two as of right now that are up. You know, you never know what's going to happen, but right now there's just New Jersey and Virginia.
Oh.
And New Jersey looks really good, so that will be a flip from Chris Christie, a Republican,
Please.
To a Democrat. And then, but, you know, not a great Democrat.
Right.
I mean, a corporate-type Democrat, but still a Democrat. And then Virginia, you've got, you know, two flawed Democrats, and it looks at this point that either one of them could be the likely Republican who'll be in that race. So there's nothing to really get, in my mind, to get excited about other than what you just brought up, that we need to have Democrats
Yes.
in gubernatorial offices to prevent Republican legislatures, which you have in Virginia, although not in New Jersey. But in Virginia, we're in great danger of a bad gerrymander. That could happen. So that's why it's so important. Even I hate to say it, but even to elect a mediocre Democrat, which is what you've got in both cases, whichever Democrat wins, neither of them is wonderful. They're both mediocre.
You know, I got an email this morning from a progressive who is running a primary against Virginia House's minority leader. He says, describes him as a corporate money-backed Democrat named David Toscano. This guy's name is Ross Mittig. He wants to come on the show, but, yeah, so I'll have to get him on because that's what we need to do. And so those are the two in 2017, then 2018, I believe there are 10 of them, including Florida. We've got nobody good there. Bill Nelson is making noises about running for governor. Oh, God help us.
I think he's backed off from that now.
Oh, really?
There was a lot of talk about that at one point, but I think now that the polling is showing that he could beat Rick Scott
to run for Senate.
I think he's going to keep his Senate seat.
Good.
I hope. But so what have you got in terms of Democrats in Florida running for governor? You know, you've got a couple in already. One of them is an old friend of mine who's currently the mayor of Sacramento, a guy named Andrew Gillum. So Andrew is a real kind of grassroots guy who's been through all of the most progressive kinds of training and has in fact been a trainer himself of young progressives. He was the head for many, many years of People for the American Ways organization,
oh, really?
Young elected officials. So Andrew's pretty good. He's not some kind of, you know, out there progressive the way you are or I am, but he's, you know, generally speaking, he's a pretty progressive guy. So he's, of all the candidates who are likely to run, he seems to be the best so far. You know, then there's the mayor of
Don't tell me Miami Beach.
Miami
Beach. Oh, God. Tell him to go away. Philip Levine. He is so full of himself. He's his biggest self-promoter. He needs to just go away. Ugh,
yeah. Well, he's absolutely terrible. Then you've got someone even worse than that. Two people who are even worse than that. One is Gwen Graham, who when she was in Congress for one term until she, you know, did a Sarah Palin and ran for her life as soon as it looked like she might be defeated.
Oh, my God.
She,
Bob Graham's daughter.
She's terrible.
Yeah.
She wants to run.
Yeah.
And then you've got Patrick Murphy,
loser.
Who's formerly a Republican and now calls himself a Democrat, although I don't know why he calls himself a Democrat, but he does, and he wants to run. So you've got a bunch of really bad candidates, which is why I'm kind of hopeful that Andrew Gillum
I'll
can
I'll have
win
to
this
reach
thing.
Out to him. I'm on his email list, so I've been getting bombarded by him. I didn't know who he was, so I will reach out.
Tell Andrew that you're a friend of mine.
I will.
And tell him you'd like to get on the show, and if you need some help getting that to happen, just, you know, get back in touch with me and I'll help you get it to happen.
You got it.
Andrew's a good guy.
Cool. Howie Klein, our time just goes by too quickly when you're here because we're at the end of the hour already.
Oh, okay. Well, that means I can go have lunch.
Go have lunch. Thank you so much. Howie Klein, find him at downwithtyranny.com and, of course, the Blue America Pack. Thank you, Howie.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you next week. Bye. And with that, we are done for the day. Don't forget, I will not be here tomorrow, but tune in for a rousing debate between me and Andrew Breitbart. And with that, we're done. I'm going to leave you with the Green News Report. And don't forget, I'll be back here live Monday for the music show at NicoleSandler.com. And, of course, back with Gotta Laugh and maybe Roger Stone on Tuesday and Wednesday. Have a great weekend, everyone.
It's Thursday, March 23, 2017.
We are going to put our coal miners back to work.
Trump promises to bring back coal jobs by dismantling Obama's climate policies. The world is moving swiftly away from coal, report finds. Flame retardant chemicals found in the Great Lakes. Wind energy hits another milestone in Europe. Plus,
flames and smoke filled the air. A scary sight no one expects to see the last day of winter.
Across the entire country, wildfire season off to a ferocious early start.
All of those early starts and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Clean call, right? Clean call.
Right. Also, Trump steaks, Trump vodka, and Trump University. You Trump voters will buy anything, right? This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, coal is back.
Apparently Trump thinks so.
Who knew?
At a rally in Louisville, Kentucky on Monday, President Trump, without any details, claimed he could bring back U.S. coal mining jobs despite the decline in the use of coal.
As we speak, we are preparing new executive actions to save our coal industry and to save our wonderful coal miners from continuing to be put out of work. The miners are coming back.
The New York Times reports that any day now, President Trump is expected to sign a sweeping executive order dismantling President Obama's landmark climate policies, including ordering the Environmental Protection Agency to withdraw or rewrite the cornerstone of Obama's climate legacy, the Clean Power Plan, the first ever emission standards for U.S. power plants, plus a whole host of smaller but very crucial programs. More details once it's released, but the upshot is that these reversals of Obama's climate policy could make it virtually impossible for the U.S. to meet its target emissions reductions agreed to in the International United Nations Paris Agreement.
These changes also may be virtually impossible to actually accomplish. There will be court challenges. It will take years to change many of these rules. We'll see if he's actually able to make these changes or if it goes as well as his travel ban, his health care policy, and everything else.
And so far, Trump's promises aren't enough to keep polluting coal plants in business. Ohio this week became the latest state to announce new coal-fired power plant closures. Residents living nearby will breathe easier. Dayton Power and Light announced on Monday it would shut down two coal plants in southern Ohio next year because burning coal for electricity is uneconomical now due to the glut of cheaper natural gas along with clean wind and solar energy.
Has nobody explained that stuff to Donald Trump?
I don't think he cares.
Well, that may be true.
And Trump's dismantling of Obama's climate policies won't bring back U.S. coal jobs because the decline of coal is global. In spite of Trump's push for coal, the rest of the world is moving rapidly in the opposite direction. According to the latest annual boom and bust report on the global coal supply chain, released by a coalition of environmental groups this week, construction starts for new coal plants globally have dropped 62% over the last year. The biggest shift is in Asia, where both China and India have canceled or frozen plans to build 100 coal-fired power plants.
That's why he hates China.
Meanwhile, 2017 has already seen the earliest spring on record and the warmest ever start to the year on record in the United States. In addition to the record wildfires in Oklahoma and Kansas last week, the high temperatures have triggered an early and ferocious wildfire season across the country. Fires have now broken out from Washington State to Georgia, raising the possibility that the U.S. could be facing a record fire season. Normally in the U.S., by March, on average, wildfires have only burned about 200,000 acres. But this year, it's already hit more than 2 million.
Man, really? 2 million?
2 million. Toxic flame retardant chemicals have been found in the Great Lakes for the first time in lake bed sediment and marine bird eggshells, according to a new study from the University of Illinois. Flame retardants used in children's clothing and furniture flake off and get swept into wastewater discharge that then gets dumped into the lakes, and it persists in the environment.
And yet Donald Trump's budget proposal requires the EPA to cut the Great Lakes cleanup program by 97%.
A perfect storm of pollution. But some good news.
Take your time.
In Europe, at least, wind energy is booming. Last week, wind energy generated one-fifth of Europe's electricity, 70% of Denmark's electricity, and more than half of the electricity used in Ireland and Germany. And despite Trump's efforts to roll back President Obama's climate policies, U.S. carbon emissions are at their lowest level since 1992. That's the lowest emissions in 25 years, even as economic growth nearly doubled over that same amount of time.
Even as the hot air coming out of the White House alone has doubled since that time. For much more on all of these reports and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us widely on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We need to make our way each and every day. You need to vote and say, leave us more.